Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? How we doing? Hopefully you're not on the ledge with an anvil tied to one ankle and ready to take a dive at any minute. It does not look great, but it is not the end of the world, as your Astros are down 3-2 to the Yankees after last night's debacle. So the two teams now back here in Houston, Astros with a day off today, but we're ready to talk about that and a whole lot more. We have Barry next to me to my right. We have Tyler in for Nick, and we are ready to go till 4 o'clock with the usual suspects for you on a Thursday. As we, basically always request that your presence is, requested and you're accounted for and you participate. So throughout the show, we would love your participation as a usual suspect, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. You can call, you can text. You can hit us up on Twitter. Get this out of the way right now. It's at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, at Producer T Scott. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good, man. Do you remember back in the day when there was like cool weather those 2 days? Wasn't that great?
Yeah, we've basically outgrown that quickly.
Man, it's like, I was like, all right, here comes fall. Nope. It's hot again.
It's supposed to be really hot this weekend up in the
90s. And rainy,
again.
Right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like rainy. Storming.
Yeah, they're going to have the roof shut.
This is good weather, right? This is good.
Not the hot stuff.
Well, when it rains, you get up in there and snuggle.
Yeah. Whenever it gets cold, they call it cuffing season.
Cuffing?
Yeah.
What is that?
You just find somebody to handcuff
yourself
to? Yeah, throughout the winter.
Oh, all right.
Snuggle up. Get all cozy with them.
Get you a chubby chick. Those are always better. Or chubby dude. Either one. They're always better to snuggle with. They're warmer in the winter.
Cuffing.
Yeah. That sounds like docking.
Yeah. It does have an odd connotation to
kids,
it.
And yes. Kids, don't Google docking. Please do yourself
a
favor.
See what you did?
Don't do that.
We're off to a flying start already. You've got the children going in the wrong direction.
It is terrible. Don't ever look that up. It's the worst thing you'll trust me. You know what it is, Joel?
No, but telling them not to is just enticing them to do so.
It's pretty horrible.
I mean, if they look that up, they might as well look up those new blue waffles.
No,
See, this is the kind of stuff Barry's brought up before, and it's not good.
Don't do that, guys. I have some bad news from the Laminack household.
Uh-oh. What's that?
I broke my toilet seat.
Would you take a flying leap?
No, I was just sitting there.
You got to be kidding me.
I wish I was.
Is it plastic?
No.
It's wood?
It's the toilet seat that comes with the toilet. And I'm just sitting there.
You don't have an aftermarket toilet seat?
No, like because we just had the house built, and so we just whatever came with the toilets that we bought is what we have. And
would you subscribe to the video Rock Hard Ass?
No.
How the hell do you do that?
I don't know. I just kind of leaned to one side, you know, finishing up, and snap, and I was like, what?
God.
And it just broke, and so I blamed my wife.
Of course you did.
I closed the lid, and then later she was like, did you know the toilet seat just broke? I was like, what'd you do? She was like, nothing. I was like, did you like slam the lid? She goes, I guess I must have.
Oh, so you totally,
yeah.
Oh my
I didn't
goodness.
Own it. I just, yeah, but I did it. It was, you've never done that? Like, that's never happened to you guys?
No.
Really?
Pretty much can tell you no.
Wow. Maybe I'm just got the wrong kind of toilet seat. Lid.
Did you pull one of these whenever she did it?
What'd you do?
What'd you do?
Yes, that's pretty much what it was. That's pretty much how it went. I felt that, but they just don't make things like they used to.
Is that what it is?
Never mind. Look, I'm not that big. I mean, like right now, I weigh 187. That's not huge.
No.
That's not, that shouldn't be, the toilet seat should not be snapping on me like that.
Well, but if it's taken abuse for a long period of time, it wears out.
No different than any other toilet seat that's ever been in my life. I can't believe I'm the only one that's ever broken a toilet seat.
I can believe that.
Man.
You're a hard pooper.
No, there's no.
I really do. I think that has something to do with it.
No.
I think you have violent tendencies when taking a two.
What?
Yeah.
No, I'm just there. I'm just, you know. I just
How the hell do you break it?
It surprised me. I don't know. I guess it was just one of those things where all the weight and I don't know. It was a weak point. It was a defective seat. It was a manufacturer's flaw. I don't know. But nothing will make you feel like more of a fat ass than snapping the toilet seat in half.
I cannot believe sitting you did there. It. Did you do sitting it before there. Or after the I, Astros
in fact,
game?
I'll take a picture tonight of it. It's just sad. It's just like, I won't say when, but it was in the last day or two. But I was holding that info because I didn't want to tell you guys.
Okay.
But yeah, but then I blame my wife. So, and hopefully her brother's not listening and tells on me. Hopefully.
God. So Tyler's in for Nick. So we wanted to get this out there. But Nick has had some really serious stuff to deal with personally with his family lately. And it's forced him to take a couple of unforeseen trips overseas, and it's taken a toll on his whole family. And as a group here, we're more like a family in a small unit here with Gal Media, and we wanted to do something because, sure, we're going to miss Nick, and we appreciate Tyler, but you know, Nick is family, and we have really felt for Nick in the last couple of weeks, and wanted to try and reach out and do something to try and help him and his family as he gets through a really tough time. So I'm about to tweet it out.
I will do the same, sir.
But we have a You Caring Fund set up that we're all starting to contribute to so that we can try and help out Nick as he gets through this time. So if you can, a lot of you have been great and expressed a lot of concern and have volunteered to be there for him if he needed anything. This is one way we can all do something to try and help out Nick because, you know, he is, like I said, he's family, he's a brother, he's in need, and we want to help him if we can. So if you can, we really appreciate it, and we'll tweet that out here in the next couple of minutes.
Yeah, also 2:30, we have Sigmund Bloom, so get your fantasy questions in. We already, have our first one at 102. That's a new record, I think, for fantasy questions getting added. So 713-780-3776. You can text the show your fantasy questions. You can tweet them to me at Barry is Funny, or you can call the show and get on at around 2:30. I suggest you call starting at 2:15, and we'll remind you when the time comes. But yeah, definitely get on to get your fantasy questions answered. Lots of questions this week, given all the new injuries that have popped up. So yeah, get in and get on Sigmund Bloom 2:30 from footballguys.com.
So we got Astros tomorrow, and so we will have plenty of Astros talk, I would assume. People forget that there is actually a football game tonight, and a pretty good one, excuse me, as the Raiders and Chiefs will do battle, so that should be a good game. The Cubs awoken from the dead last night, and at least won a game against the Dodgers, which means they're playing again today.
They'll fly the L today, I think.
You think so?
I think it's over.
Kershaw against...
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter?
Nope. They're okay. Flying the L.
All right, we'll see.
I can't wait to see all the crying Cub Jordan memes.
Oh, they're coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I want someone to take the W and then put Jordan's face in the background of the W inside of it. You know what I mean?
I think I've seen that one before.
Has it been done?
Are you talking about Jordan's face as the background?
No, as the inside as the W. W. Inside the W,
I feel like that's okay. Pretty
fun. Well, if not, then it needs to happen.
It's I know over. I've seen Joe Madden with it on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
People are actually tweeting you pictures of toilet seats with wings on them so that you can avoid the...
Because I'm a leaner. I don't like some people when they're done to clean up, they stand up. I'm a leaner. I just lean to the side. I don't know.
What That's kind of heathen me. Stands up?
I don't know, but some people
I feel
do.
Like you're
stands
risking...
up to Duke?
Yeah, no, no when you're no, done no, to clean up.
Oh,
no, clean up.
I feel some like you're risking do. Getting stuff everywhere.
Well, not if you're not finished, you are, but usually you just finish your business, and I know some people will stand up and do it. I'm sure. I'm a leaner. Are you a leaner, Tyler?
I'm a leaner.
Are you a leaner, Joel?
No.
What do you do? You go front to back.
Oh, you're talking about when you wipe? Yes. Oh, definitely a leader okay. When I wipe. Yeah, you have to be.
Okay. Hey, it doesn't matter what direction you go in, as long as you use a wet wipe.
It doesn't if you're a woman.
If you're using a wet wipe.
It doesn't if you're a woman.
Bro, use a wet wipe and it won't matter.
The one that adds all kinds
you're
of...
You're wrong.
...questioning. If someone goes in from the front to wipe,
yeah, that's,
plays the five hole...
That's weird.
Okay, that's weird. That's really, really weird.
That's what I'm saying. This show, boy, we are off the rails.
Yeah, thanks, Josh Rapp. I see that. Yeah. All right. So we've got a busy show for you today. As we mentioned, Sigmund Bloom, we like to do this. You guys are great about doing it. You were great last week. You're already starting to do it this week. But line up the questions now, because we're going to do rapid fire at 2:30 for one segment with Sigmund Bloom to get to all of your fantasy football questions. You can text us. You can tweet us. You can do anything. You can call during the time that he's on, and we'll get those calls. We'll tell you when to call right before we go to the last break, before he joins us. But we're not kidding when we say we want to try and get every one of these questions answered. So we are going to go quickly, and that's why we would appreciate you being ahead of the game and getting us your questions ahead of time. Other than that, we're going to talk about a lot of things. And if there's something on your mind, feel free to join us. 713-780-3776. HRNP listener line, call or text. Or like I said, hit us up on Twitter. Back with a whole lot more. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on the big show as we just get things started on The Usual Suspects. As it's been interesting, to say the least, trying to get everything present and accounted for. I'm still a little bit shaken by Nick, so that one's bothering me a little bit. But hopefully you guys will do what you do and come through for the big man as he is getting ready to leave the country this afternoon. Astros, you guys are Houstonians, longtime Houstonians. I've been through a lot of these things before. Was really bummed last night. Not going to throw in the towel, but where are you on the panic meter?
It's time. I said yesterday if they lost, I feel like they would lose in Game 7. I still hold true to that. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm really wrong. But it was exactly what I had hoped wouldn't happen happened, and it's the exact reason why I didn't want them to pitch Keuchel in Game 5. If you run Brad Peacock out there, who ended up pitching anyways,
yeah.
Or if you run someone else, Morton or McHugh or whoever you want, Peacock made the most sense. But if you run Peacock out there and he wins, hey, look at that. It's found money on the road. That's great. But if he goes out there and he loses, no problem. You come back down 3-2 with your two aces going at home. In Game 6 and Game 7. But what happened now is you ran Keuchel out there, and his magic and his mojo got worn off against New York, and they lost. And now you come back down 3-2. You've got Verlander going tomorrow. But then, if assuming he wins, you go into Game 7 without an ace on the hill. Now, I know McCullers said he's ready to go. Do you trust McCullers on short rest when you finally got a good outing from him after coming back from, you know, injury? I don't. So your choices are basically you can run out Morton or you can run out McHugh, and you got to go out and face Sabathia in a Game 7.
Yeah.
Not good.
I'm with you. I mean, you were spot on with that. And as much as I'm assuming the best for Game 6, I definitely am worried about Game 7.
I mean, when you look at Keuchel, his numbers on the road versus at home, everything else is fine, right? Like, he was 8-2, I think, on the road, 6-3 at home or something like that. But his ERA on the road versus home was significantly different. Home ERA, 2.26. Road ERA, 3.53. That's a pretty big jump between home and road as far as runs that you're giving up. And we saw it last night. He didn't pitch as well. He has in the past, so there was no reason to think he couldn't. But this is why I feel like you had to save those two bullets for coming home again. So,
yeah, you know, in terms of McCullers, the biggest thing with me is going to be the control aspect of it, and the fact that when you rely so heavily on that curveball has got to be pinpointed to exactly where you want to put it, and you can't leave it up in the zone. And when guys come on short rest, and when they come back on short rest, they run into problems with their control. That's something that bothers me. And you're right. Sabathia is going to have all the confidence in the world to come out in a Game 7. He has been there and done that. He is a guy that they will lean on. They've got Sonny Gray behind him. So it does. It definitely concerns me, but more so than anything else, the biggest concern is the bats just are not anywhere near going where they need to be going. You know, you can start with the fact that Reddick doesn't have a hit. You can start that Springer got a bloop hit, but he's only got two hits in the series. You got Altuve, Bregman's, you got Correa.
What's that? I think Bregman's 0 for something or one for, I don't know, he has one or zero hits, whatever it is.
We were on the same page, Barry. You tweeted it. I did not, but I was thinking about it, and I spoke to a few people, including I did some network interviews last night where we were talking about it. But is it time to mix up the order?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those things where this lineup isn't getting it done, and I felt like, and I put this on my Houston Sports and stuff, but I tweeted it out during the game, and I just feel like the lineup's not producing. You can't have two guys at the top of this lineup in Springer and Reddick going 2 for 35. Springer's got a 238 on base, Reddick the same. You can't have those guys not producing at the top of the order. You can have one. You can fade one if you've got a strong lineup behind them, but you can't fade both. And so I don't think you move Springer out of his position in the lineup, just like you wouldn't move Altuve or Correa. You don't move your stars around. But guys like Reddick, who aren't really a superstar, but are at the top of that lineup, can be moved. And so what I tweeted out, what I think the lineup should be for 6 and 7, I think you got to start off with Springer still. Move Altuve up to the 2-hole. Then you put Gurriel in the 3-hole, because he's their best hitter right now in the playoffs. So I would put Gurriel 3. Protect him with Correa at 4. Then you can bat Marwin Gonzalez at 5, Bregman at 6, move Josh Reddick all the way down to 7. I would take Carlos Beltran out of the lineup and add Gurriel. Add Gattis. Gattis is better against righties than Beltran is anyways, and Beltran's not giving you anything at all. Gattis is hitting 270 against righties, so even though you're going to be facing Severino, who's a righty, I still feel better with Gattis in there. And then you have McCann hitting 9th in that order. That's what I think you should do. I mean, I would move Altuve up 1. He might even get an extra at bat out of the whole thing.
Well, that's where I'm thinking.
By moving him up.
It's kind of like the Yankees batting Judge at 2. He should be, in most cases, old school. He would have been a cleanup hitter. But they want as many at bats as possible for him and his bat. I want as many at bats as possible for Altuve, too. So I was on the same page. But based on the struggles of George Springer and maybe just trying to get him to relax a little bit as he moved down in the lineup, I thought about moving everybody up, starting with Altuve leading off because he's also your fastest guy in the lineup. If he gets on, he can make some things happen on the base path. He's proven that he's going to get on more than Springer, at least at this point. Then at 2, I and I'm with you. You could do it a lot of different ways. I also know that, you know, Reddick has been the best hitter at home in the American League, but he just isn't doing it in this series. I just thought about sliding everybody up, and I said Altuve at 1, Correa at 2, Gurriel at 3, Springer at 4, because at least Springer then realizes he's still, you know, he's important. They know that he's got pop. They know he's in a position where he's going to have hitting with runners on the bases or in scoring position where they can still capitalize on him. Then go with Marwin and Bregman and those guys. And definitely, I'm on the same page as you. I would take Beltran out of the lineup. I'm sorry. The bat looks slow. The at-bats look bad. I'm just not with him anymore, and this is the time where you can't take any more chances hoping someone gets out of it. You just got to go with the guys that you know are going to make contact and going to be give you your best chance to win. I would put Gattis in the lineup as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I want a guy 2 for 18 hitting in the cleanup spot, which is what Springer is right now. But I mean, they you've got to do something.
None of them are really hitting.
Yeah, I mean, other than Gurriel, right. None of them are hitting. Like I said before, Correa is he's come up with some clutch hits, but he's not tearing the cover off the ball by any stretch of the imagination. So that's what I would do. I would definitely change up the lineup. I wouldn't have pitched Keiko yesterday, but now it is what it is. You've got Verlander out there, and if he falters, it's over. But going into game 7, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who you've got, assuming they win. Who's gonna take the mound in game 7? I know it's all hands on deck, but some of these guys just pitch, so you're not going to have them at your leisure and at your disposal.
I think Morton pitched a lot better than the numbers are going to show in his first outing in this series. I think he's a guy that you give him the ball because he's still got pop on the fastball. He's got a very, very good curveball, and you start there. And if he struggles, you don't hesitate. You can't wait. You've got, you know, I know the managers in all these series are being, you know, under the microscope and just hyper criticized and scrutinized. But look, there is no tomorrows. If he gets in any trouble, you yank him. You've got McCullers. You've got McHugh. You've got guys you can go to that at least the guys you can trust, because there's some other guys that are going to be there that it's going to be a big question mark whether he has the confidence to go, you know, try and put a Davinsky in there, try and put a Gregerson or whoever. I hopefully don't see Liriano at all.
Well, didn't he give you a scoreless inning?
Fine. Yeah. He did his part.
I mean, I'm with you, though. I don't know that there's anyone in the bullpen that you can really, truly trust and count on at this point. They've all had their struggles. And the same is true in the lineup. I mean, everybody's struggling. How many times? I can't remember Altuve striking out this many times in this short a span. So I think everybody's pressing. Everybody's expanding their strike zone. George Springer said that he's looking forward to a day off. And my response was, it seems like pretty much every day has been off so far for you guys. Like, I know you're looking forward to the rest, but you guys have taken several days off during this series. So I don't know what the answer is. I know watching the Cubs game last night at the end, I forget who it was, but they asked him, what's the difference? You've been 0 for this ALCS or the NLCS. What did you do different? He said, I just stopped trying so hard. I just stopped.
I told you, man.
I went out there and I just swung the bat and whatever happened, happened. And I think that's what you're seeing right now with guys like Springer and Reddick. Reddick especially. Also, Reddick is pulling off the ball something terrible. I mean, his front side is open up. If I'm noticing it, and I'm not a hitting coach or a hitting expert, but if I'm seeing him pull off the ball that much, he's got to be struggling right now.
What do you think about putting in like a young guy in the lineup, like Fisher?
Like Fisher or Centeno?
Or Centeno. And that's the thing with McCann, too, because he's not hitting. So you put Centeno on the lineup.
Well, the reason why you don't do it.
I know just
McCann
because,
and Verlander, I'm not messing with that.
Well, yeah.
Well, not even that. The reason why I wouldn't do it is Severino's a righty, and I want that left-handed bat in the lineup with McCann. Okay. But in game seven, you know what I mean? I don't know.
You pull out all the stops.
Yeah.
Or at least try to. But the thing with maybe putting Fisher in the DH is where Beltran was. The way he's hitting the ball, he's hitting slow choppers to third, slow choppers to first, whatever. And if there's somebody on base in front of him, that's a double play ball because Beltran's so slow. But Fisher may or may not be able to beat that out.
Yeah, but you're assuming Fisher's going to make contact. I like Gaddis.
We know
at the
Fisher
DH
can
spot.
Hit.
Gaddis against righties and lefties is better than Beltran and Fisher, which is why I don't understand. I mean, he had I forget what his average was in the ALDS, but he hit well. It seemed like every time I looked up, he was standing on second when he was batting. I think he hit over 400 or something like that. I could be off on those numbers because my stupid internet here isn't working.
But mine either.
But yeah, I trust Gaddis right now more than I would trust a rookie like Fisher or a guy that just doesn't have it right now like Beltran.
Here's the thing that I want to get to, too, about Springer. If you look at his post-game quotes and look at the quotes over the last two games of this series, you can tell how hard he's pressing. First, he's pleading with the media. You guys don't realize how hard hitting is. You fail 7 out of 10 times and you're a Hall of Famer. This is really tough, and hitting is really the toughest part of this sport. It's almost like he's pleading to get some kind of a little, you know, just a little bit of pad room here while he works his stuff out. Springer. And then they were all saying, God, we never heard, you know, a stadium louder. It was like a college football game and then some. This place was just, you know, it took its toll on us. Come on, fellas. I mean, this is where I'm saying Springer's been pressing the whole time. The body language, the actions, the quotes. He's just got to relax and get back to being free, you know, freestyling George that has fun in the dugout and lets it go. Because pressing is not doing him any, not a good look.
And I think a lot of it goes back to maybe Hinch overmanaging. I mean, just the way he kind of changes the lineup. Like, he basically just flip-flops Bregman and Reddick every other day.
Yep.
And we know that that doesn't work. So why do you keep doing it, you know?
I think they're just reaching. I don't know. I mean, I think everyone right now in that dugout is in panic mode, and that seems AJ Hinch as well.
I think this off day is probably more of a mental off day where they're probably just going to kind of check out.
It could be, but that baffles me a little bit because baseball has been like this. I mean, it's kind of a grind. If I'm AJ Hinch, the one thing I tell these guys is, look, we got swept by the A's. We lost 3 in a row there, and we came back and went on a run. There's no reason we can't come back and win again. There's no reason we can't go home and win again. And Altuve said that in a post-game presser. He said, look, we did what we were supposed to do by winning at home twice. They did what they were supposed to do by coming up here and winning. Now we're going to go back home, and I expect us to win. So we'll see if it happens. I still don't know that I put all the emphasis on home field advantage in the playoffs, but it's playing out like that right now. The home team is winning them all, so we'll see how it plays out. But right now, what I want you to do is put down what you're doing and get ready to go to Cowboys and Indians for lunch because they're having some fantastic specials for you guys. You need to go check it out. Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen is what I'm talking about. It's delicious. They're located at 1901 Taft in Midtown. And if you don't know what it is, if you've been living under a rock and you haven't heard me talking about it, Cowboys and Indians is a mix of both Southern comfort and Indian food. For example, you can get chicken curry or you can get chicken fried steak. You can get some wings and sliders or you can get this Himalayan Heat burger that I think happens to be one of the best burgers in Houston. You should go try it and tell me if I'm right or wrong. They have quesadillas made with naan bread. They're known for the best butter chicken in Houston. All of it delicious. All of it family recipes when it comes to the Indian food that has been passed down over generations with Haas and his family, and they've perfected them. So get out there and give it a shot. It's Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen, 1901 Taft in Midtown. And here's the lunch special I was telling you about. If you get out there between 11 and 3 for a limited time, you can get the ESPN 97.5 special, which is a half-pound classic burger with fries for $8.99. Dude, you can't beat that. And I'm telling you, you're gonna text me, tweet me, or whatever, and tell me how good the food is, because everybody else has as well. They got a full-service bar to watch the games at. They've got specials during Astros games for 97.5 and SportsMap listeners. I don't know why you're not going out there, but you need to get out there right away. Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen. You can have it delivered via DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Grubhub. 1901 Taft in Midtown. CNI713 on Facebook. Take your taste buds on a delicious journey around the world with Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen.
Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Davis has his sign. Bellinger waiting. Taylor not going. 2-1 and a fastball swung on. Hit hard to second. To Russell for one. Back to first. Double play. 4-6-3 double play. And the Cubs win it. They hang on by the skin of their teeth here in game four to beat the Dodgers 3-2 and force a fifth game here at Wrigley tomorrow night.
So at least Dan Shulman and the rest of the ESPN crew are letting you know that there is hope still alive in the Windy City for one more day as they face Clayton Kershaw. I was surprised. I saw the numbers this morning on Kershaw. For as good as he's been in the regular season and dominant, not so good in the playoffs.
Not a good postseason.
Like a
pitcher.
Plus four ERA.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about it before, but Verlander kind of got a bad rap because he stumbled a little bit. But if you really look at his numbers, he's pitched well in the postseason. Mm-hmm. I think his knock on his postseason performance is maybe a little unwarranted, but not Kershaw's. He's earned every bit of the knock on him being able to come through in the playoffs.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But the Cubs, for Javi Baez wakes up, he gets two bombs. The wind was blowing out. I think I saw some stuff. I think the first four or first five runs were all from solo home runs.
Yep.
So I was flipping back and forth between that and the Rockets game.
Yeah.
And pleasantly surprised that the Rockets got a victory in a game that I really firmly believed that they would lose a year ago without Chris Paul. Sacramento, take them for granted. Harden struggling for three quarters, but they won too.
All five runs last night were solo.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's what I was doing. I was going back and forth. Were you watching?
I watched the Cubs game a little bit. Right. I watched a lot of the Rockets game, but I kind of lost interest in it down the stretch, because I thought, you know what, they're probably going to win this game, and it's a team they should beat. And I mean, it's nice seeing some of these guys that Sacramento has, some of these young players, but I wouldn't have watched the Rockets against a little better competition than that. And plus, I was just, I don't know, I had to write my article for Houston Sports and stuff, so that always distracts me. I always wait way too long. I don't finish that thing until like 2 in the morning. Ugh. For some reason, like 1:30 last night is when I posted it. I wait way too long for it. The controversy from last night, obviously, mm-hmm. was the Granderson foul ball, no foul ball, strikeout, and Joe Maddon losing his mind. What baffled me, and I agree with Maddon on this, is apparently the umpires told him they heard two different sounds, which is why they called it a foul tip. and not a strikeout. And I don't know that you can just go off of sound. Like, if you didn't see it, then you shouldn't call it. Yeah. And Matt had a great point. Well, what if there was just some noise from some lady in the fifth row or whatever? Like, I don't know why you if you didn't see it, then you shouldn't call it.
Here's Joe Maddon on that exact call.
Sorry.
Oh,
I have the call, not Joe Maddon.
Okay, go ahead.
23 pitches and counting for Davis. Another 2-2. Curveball, swing and a miss on a ball in the dirt. Granderson saying he fouled it off. I believe he's saying that he fouled it off.
And he did.
I don't know if Jim Wolf agrees with him right now. Here comes Dave Roberts. And whether or not you foul the ball off is not a reviewable play. It definitely hit the dirt. That I know for sure. And Roberts touching his hands together as if to say, that ball's a foul tip. But Jim Wolf says, I don't see it that way. And Granderson is out.
Well, it was great execution, Dan, with the curveball. And looking at the replay in slow-mo, it does not look like Granderson gets a piece of this ball. It definitely ends up in the dirt as Contreras smothers it.
And Dave Roberts has come out and he's asking Jim Wolf to confer with the other umpires. Again, it is not reviewable whether or not a ball was fouled off or not, but you can ask the umpires to have a conversation. Most likely to maybe have a different opinion to have seen it is the third base umpire, Eric Cooper, but they've got to be awfully sure if they're going to overrule from better than 90 feet away.
That's the big thing. Why are you going to the outfield umpires to get their opinion on a foul tip at the plate? Like, that's your call.
Well, the bigger issue to me is why it isn't reviewable. Everything else is. And in this regard, you could, and here's the problem, because it's not reviewable, but yet on the scoreboard, and in the NBA, they have a rule that you are not allowed to show anything, any replay on the big board unless it's what's on the monitor that the officials are looking at if they go to review. Otherwise, they don't want the controversy of the fans getting involved in it. Well, that's too late, and evidently they don't have that rule in baseball.
Yeah, because that happens a lot in baseball.
Man.
Because, and especially if it's kind of a home cooking type thing. When and it even
you know it's going
Astros,
against you at home.
Yeah, if you know it's going against you, then you're not going to play it. But if you have people who see it and it's obviously the wrong call or goes, it works better for you, then they're going to play it so that way it gets the fans fired
up. And they did because the fans got into it. And, you know, Maddon was just testing how long he could go because he must have dropped about 25 F-bombs in the first 30 seconds as if, I dare you to toss me on this too.
Oh, I think he wanted to be tossed.
Yeah, and he definitely did. But at the same time, you know, it took a lot of time. We're talking about how long games take. I think it was something like 4 hours for that game last night again, or 3:37 to 4 hours. You could have reduced it a lot by what was going on there, but at least get the call right. We've said this all along, and I keep going back to it. If the main objective is to get the call right, that would have taken all of 30 seconds to see the replay, to know it wasn't even close.
Yeah, but I don't know that you want to open up the can of worms where you start looking at balls and strikes and foul balls and
but
all that.
But it's not. That's a foul ball. I understand the strike zone. I'm with you on that
but
100%.
But this is for a strikeout, not necessarily was it fair or foul. I get fair or foul like down the line and stuff, but this was for a strikeout. Once you open up that can of worms, there's no going
it's
back.
It's different to me. If it's a strikeout because of the location in the zone, it's one thing. But if you're just trying to see if a bat and ball made contact, that one was, if it was reviewable, would have taken 30 seconds. It would have been all over with. They would have been back to going in the proceeding forward, and it wouldn't have been an issue. Instead, it just brings up all kinds of minutia. Maddon gets tossed. It take you know, thankfully for I think for everybody involved, the next pitch Granderson strikes out because now it doesn't really come back to haunt the Cubs.
Right. Well, and then Maddon and Tim Kirkchen later on Scott Benpel's Sports Center all talking about how well they admire the umpires and they do such a great job. I'm sorry, but I watching this Astros series, I think the umpires are doing a terrible job behind the plate. The strike zone has been all over the place. They're calling a pitch 3-4 inches off the plate as a strike. It's just I think that the umpires just in this series have done a terrible job behind the plate.
But for so you saying that, but guys. Not last night. Because last night the thing that bothered me is I'm driving home and I believe I was listening to the local broadcast, but they said with Keuchel on the mound, here's something to really take note of, and that is the fact that the guy behind the plate has the sixth worst strike zone in the league in terms of being liberal with the corners and the top and the bottom of the strike zone. And you saw it. Keuchel was extremely frustrated in the first three innings. He was talking to the umpires between innings. He was walking to the dugout, cussing and talking into his mitt because he wasn't getting the calls he was getting and is used to getting, and it really hurt him. But on the other side of the equation, I really thought Tanaka was getting the corners. And that's a big thing with those guys because they're down in the zone, and if they're not getting that, then they're behind in the count. Tanaka, I thought, was getting the one that comes to mind right off the top, the one with two on that they rung up Springer on, was outside the zone. It was a good low pitch, but it was 95, and it was outside the black, but they called it strike three. Keuchel was just begging for that, and that doesn't help either because he's out there shaking the tin cup on it. But at the same time, from the minute I heard that, I was like, Keuchel's in trouble.
The strikeout in the fourth with Bird was one where he finally got a call off the plate that he wasn't getting, but I just, all series, I don't think that the strike zone has been consistent at all. You're seeing calls where, like I said, it'll be 4 inches off the plate, they'll call it a strike, and then later in the game, it's not a strike, and you want to see some consistency. If you're going to call the outside corner and off of it a bit a strike, that's fine, but just be consistent with it game to game, and it's just not happening. And I know it's a different umpire behind the plate, but even in the game, it's not consistent, and that becomes an issue. And then the other problem I had was, as far as balls and strikes with these guys, is when Springer struck out in the fifth, you can't go down looking right there. You've got to be swinging, especially
we're talking about the same at bat, the 95 on the outside corner.
Yep. Yeah. You can't go down looking there. You've got to swing the bat, man, and that's just part of the slump that he's in.
So there you have it. So now it sets the table for the final, hopefully two at Minute Maid, but at least tomorrow night it's Verlander and Severino as they go at it for Game 6. Hopefully the trend continues and the home team can continue to be victorious as the Astros try to fight back in this series. Right now, I want to tell you about the good people at Houston Cans Cars for Kids. It's a great program here in the Houston area, and it's Houstonians helping kids in Houston as they try to get a second chance at an education, and it's all because of donations from people like you. I know that Hurricane Harvey was devastating to a lot of people, and now you're left with motor vehicles that aren't working, and you don't know what to do to get rid of them. Whether they were insured or not, it's on you to try and find a home for them and get them off your property. Well, here's what you can do. Houston Cans Cars for Kids program, whether you have a motorcycle, a car, a truck, a trailer, a boat, RV, and it's running or not, and you need to get rid of it, all you've got to do is pick up the phone and call 713-225-4226 or log on to HoustonCarsForKids.com. You tell them what you got. You tell them where you live. They come to you with a tow truck. They take it away. They do all the paperwork. You get a tax deduction on top of it. And then if you mention ESPN 97.5, you also get a $50 gift card. But that's where the process really begins, because you wipe your hands clean of this motor vehicle that's not working. They use it as a donation that then becomes resources for kids trying to get an education. That could be warm meals. It could be book money. It could be bus fare. It could be eyeglasses and so much more. But your donations make it possible to give kids these resources so that they can focus on the books. It's a great program, and it's all because of donations from people like you. So if you can, please consider a donation. 713-225-4226 or HoustonCarsForKids.com. As always, right off the car, not the kid.
Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Tyler Scott in for Nick Sciarra for the near future as Nick takes care of some personal business and some tough family stuff. We did put it out there on our Twitter accounts for Barry and myself. Please, if you can, help us to donate some funds to try and help Nick as he's had to make two emergency trips to Egypt. They are not cheap, and his family is really taxed at this time. And if the usual suspects can come together and provide some help, we'd really appreciate it.
I'm trying to get on our Wi-Fi again and get it fixed, and I'm looking at all the different Wi-Fi options, mm-hmm. like hotspots. Mm-hmm. There's one called Girls Gone Wireless.
That's pretty good. Great. That's pretty good.
Yeah, not too shabby. I guess I'm just going to have to use my phone because it's not working around here. But and by the way, we got several people that texted the show, I've broken a toilet seat before. It pinched my butt cheek and left a bruise. That'll happen. My toilet seat broke last week. Tried to keep using it throughout after it pinched my ass. Yeah, I know. I thought about just taping it. Just getting some duct tape. The wife's not going to go for that, though. Definitely not.
It's a good look, actually. Have company come over then and use that bathroom.
Or the tape toilet seat? Yeah. Well, it's in our master, so at least there's that. AG from the Woodlands said, last night on Jimmy Kimmel, he played a bit that was LA versus New York because they're the likely World Series matchup, basically saying it's over. What do you guys think? I think it's over. And I'm going to stick by that. I hope I'm wrong, but I think going into Game 7, it's not a good look with Sabathia versus whoever you're throwing out there.
Yeah, I was on the network side last night. They asked me, and I said, as much as I want to say when they said predictions, are we going to a Game 7? I said, I think we're going to a Game 7, but I can't honestly say that the Astros are going to pull it out simply because from the standpoint of the way the Astros are playing, they're playing tight. We mentioned that, and they're not hitting like they have all season long. The Yankees are playing loose and loosey-goosey. They're free-swinging. And it just seems their mix of veterans, if there's going to be a key play where you've really got to use your baseball smarts and savvy, I just expect that the Yankees are going to execute that right now, and I'm just not sold on the Astros doing the same.
Did you see how he dropped that? I did the network last night. He's big leaguing me.
No.
He's doing national, you drop on the carpet.
Lately.
He's doing national network now, and I'm just like.
No, I only bring that up because my opinions were asked, and I'm like, look, you know,
which network did you do?
I think it was for RSB Nation.
Nice,
yeah. So it was. Did you tell Matt Peralta?
Did you tell him how to not listen to that and listen to us instead?
No.
Oh well, why not? You wasted an opportunity.
Oh, we promoted the hell out of the show.
Okay,
yeah, definitely. Right. But we're not playing to the Houston audience, in this case, we're playing.
Well, they could get the nationwide app and get to. So you did. I figured they would have you on to talk basketball.
They gave me a minute and a half. No, we were talking baseball the whole time. But if they really wanted to give me a minute and a half to plug the show, I definitely would have plugged the app and everything.
So who was it? Was it what was the show?
Matt Peralta.
I never heard of it.
I'm just messing with you. That's all right.
No.
I'm going to be honest with you. I agreed to do it.
Yeah.
And I was half asleep. The dog was sleeping on the couch next to me. I'm watching the Rockets game and the Cubs Dodgers game. The phone rings, and it almost took everything I had to just press end right away because I'm like, I don't know that number. And at the last minute, I thought, no, whoever's calling me this late might have a purpose. And they're like, hey, Joel, ready to go out with the network? And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. I've been waiting for you. I didn't know if you guys were going to call.
Of course I'm ready. God. Why wouldn't I be? Because I agreed to do this, and I love it.
Yeah. So that was a bit...
Nice. Well, that's good, man. You're big time out there moving and shaking. You've done, NBC? The local thing with what's his name, Randy McIlvray.
Yeah, I've done Channel 2 several times with Randy and Wex and those guys.
That's fancy.
No, and most of it's basketball related because you get friends across the league that want you to do it, and then you end up doing a lot of these announcers have their own shows too that are network wise.
Yeah,
and they just go to it used to be called there was a red book and a blue book in the NBA.
You
worked in the NBA. The blue book gave you every phone number for every media outlet, newspaper, radio, TV. The red book was every cell phone, home address and everything for every key personnel with every NBA front office.
So would you just call people randomly and be like, hey, what's up, man?
To be honest with you, I was looking for it when you and I solidified this show, and I've asked them for another one, and of course they're not quick to give it to me. I was like, God, I could just turn this over to Nick, and we could have the cell phones and direct access to everyone we wanted.
Be like, yeah, may I speak with Michael Jordan? Is he available? Like, what?
So... Whenever I first started on the network side, they're like, hey, you're going to be booking guests, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, cool. They didn't tell you how stressful that is because it's literally like you're cold emailing, cold texting. I never called people. I just hate cold calling people. But I would always just send texts like, hey, this is Tyler Scott, producer for SB Nation. Wondering if you... had a few minutes, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I literally, like, my first week, I sent out probably, like, 75 texts and got 10 responses. And 9 of those were, no, can't do it. Can't do it unless you pay me. Like,
wow.
Dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
That kind of thing has to be personal. And Joel will probably tell you that because having done it as much as he did, a phone call probably is the best way to do it,
no
right?
No question. No question about it.
As opposed to email and text. It's got to be one of those personal things where they can hear the sincerity on your side, and they're maybe more apt to do it.
And
I don't know.
The thing is, though, like, if you're doing a bunch of other stuff for the station, for these two stations, then you don't really have time to just sit there and call a bunch of people. So that was my thing. I was producing Game Day at that time and would always spend a lot of time on the rewind. So I didn't let that suffer for you.
Oh, well that's good.
Here's the thing, because we used to also have to monitor, and me being in the management position too with all the broadcasters working with me,
yep.
I had to make sure, hey, don't talk today, say this, say that. And then I would field most of the requests and then go to the actual guys. That's why I give Blummer all the credit in the world, because he does pretty much everybody that asks him. He makes time for them. A lot of people don't. Clyde was one that he got so many requests that he just said, from now on, tell every radio person no, because I feel bad if I do one and then don't do another and then everybody gets their feelings hurt. I'm not doing radio. I'll do national TV and select radio, but you got to kind of draw the line somewhere. If you are amicable to doing everything, believe me, they're going to ask. And so at some points, you kind of got to, it's hard to cut them off, because there's going to be a time when you ask them too.
Yeah.
So it makes it difficult, but you know, I appreciate the fact that it is. It's a go-getter's game. And I think one of the ones that's really most difficult that I've heard of is when bosses tell producers, Tyler, hey, call the hotel and just run down the roster. You know, that's why guys on our team, it was funny, when we would check into hotels, you'd get the rooming list, and all of a sudden you'd start going, who's Slim Shady? Who's, you know, and Charles was
Ron Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody got to come up with their own alias, and Charles was always like Babe Ruth, or, you know, he always had sports stars. But some of the other ones, you're like, really? Like, they came up with some creative ones, but it's all because the crank calls, too, used to come to wake those guys up in the middle of the night to try and get them off their game the next day.
Interesting. Yeah. And somebody said, don't ever go into sales, Tyler, because you got, they're making 700 calls a day, getting 450 no's. You would hate it. But you got to get through all the no's to get to the yes. It's just like dating.
I hate sales because I've done it.
It's just like dating, right? You got to get through the no's to get to the yes. So, yeah. All right, guys. I want to tell you about Gulf State Homebuyers. We all know that Hurricane Harvey has come and gone, and our city and our surrounding areas have been devastated by the storms, and the folks at Gulf State Homebuyers believe now's the time for us to come together as a community and help each other out, and they want to do their part. So the team at Gulf State Homebuyers wants to reach out to you and offer their services to help you make the right decisions as you move forward after the storms. Now, when you're dealing with Gulf State Homebuyers, you're dealing with a company that's won the Distinction Award from the Better Business Bureau the last 2 years, 2016 and 2017. And when you're saying, well, Barry, what does that mean? It means you're dealing with a company that you can trust when you work with them. Now, you might be sitting there looking at your home and you're thinking, okay, do I rebuild it because I have this estimate that this is what it's going to cost me, and then do I take the chance of it flooding again, or do I just go ahead and sell it and maybe move somewhere else that's not in the flood zone? That's where the folks at Gulf State Homebuyers can help you. They're going to come out and give you a no-hassle, no-obligation cash offer evaluation for your home. But you're not going to get that if you don't call them. It's Gulf State Homebuyers, 281-717-6100. Give them a call. Let them come out. Let them give you a cash offer estimate for your home. Then you can take that offer and you can compare it to how much it's going to cost to fix your home. And then you can make an educated and informed decision based on that. Gulf State Homebuyers has a complete in-house attorney team, title companies, an entire staff of professionals ready to help you. So give them a call, 281-717-6100, or visit them on the web, gulfstatehomebuyers.com.